Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Thursday, April the 20th, with the good music there of my good friend Carlos Guedes from Venezuela. We're going to be talking a lot about, tragically, about what's happening in Venezuela in a few minutes with our friend Fausta Rodriguez Wirth, the editor of Fausta's blog. We're also going to talk about Ecuador, where weren't they supposed to have a recount? I don't know. Oops, I pushed the wrong button there for a minute. Weren't they supposed to have a recount in Ecuador? I think they were, but hasn't happened yet. That runaway governor in Mexico is still a big story. And, of course, we'll quickly look back at Mariel 1980, 37 years ago, but it's still a fresh memory in the hearts and minds of so many of us. I just wanted to quickly point out that this is Tito Puente's birthday. He would have been in his probably close to his 90s by now, but he was born on this day in 1923. He died in 2000, one of the great performers of Latin America. And, you know, I kind of grew up listening to music like that, especially when it was really cold in Wisconsin. I always thought Tito Puente was Cuban until a Puerto Rican friend reminded me that, no, he's not. But anyway, Tito Puente, we remember him today. He was born on this day in New York City of Puerto Rican parents. And Preston Gomez, here's a Cuban for you. Preston Gomez was not a great major league player, but he did become a major league manager, and he was the first Latino to be a major league manager. Technically, Mike Gonzalez had been a major league manager in the late 30s, but he was never actually officially the manager. He was an interim manager with the Cardinals, but Preston Gomez was the very first Latin American to be a major league manager. So we remember him. He was born on this day as well. He died, I think, 2015 or something like that. Let me say hello to Fausta Rodriguez Wirth, who's probably a big fan of Tito Puente, I would think. Fausta?
Yes, Silvio. Actually, I like Oye Como Va much better than Santana's version.
Well, I got to tell you a Tito Puente story because you'll laugh. Tito Puente was in Dallas about a month or so before he died. I don't remember the exact time. And a couple of friends were encouraging us to go, and we just couldn't make it. So I said, maybe we'll go and see him in Houston, because he was going to be in Houston the following week or the following month or something. Well, unfortunately, he passed away and we never got to see him. But the funny story is that my friends were telling me that my friend from Puerto Rico was telling me that he did go to the concert, and Tito Puente said the following, something like this. He said, well, we recorded this song called Oye Como Va a long time ago, and ever since Santana had a big hit, we've been playing a lot of Oye Como Va. And that's what they were saying. And that's what he said in this concert. And my friend cracked up. But a lot of people forget that that's a Tito Puente song, not a Santana song. But of course, Santana did put it on the radio, particularly the English radio, Fausta.
Oh, yeah. Santana did him a favor. I'm sure he was getting royalties for that for a long time. And I'm sure when Santana did it, it probably tripled it, because a lot of people who were younger didn't remember the old version.
No, I actually didn't even figure it out until I got the Santana album, and I look at the credits, and it says Tito Puente for the songwriter, and I said, wait a minute, is that the same song? It was. So we remember Tito Puente, one of the great personalities of Latin America. I just wanted to say very quickly, I have a post hopefully on Friday morning where I talk a little bit about what's happening with Bill O'Reilly, and this is for a couple of friends in Mexico who sent me emails and wanted me to bring it up, but we're actually going to bring it up on Friday's show, which is more domestic politics. We have too much about Venezuela and all of that to get into today, but I'm a little bit concerned about what happened to Bill O'Reilly, and not concerned because I defend sexual harassment, nothing like that, but I'm concerned because I just think this is really a campaign by the left to shut down people they disagree with. And to me, there's so much selective indignation here, so much hypocrisy. I mean, articles in the New York Times, the same New York Times that endorsed Bill and Hillary Clinton. Well, those people have their own sexual harassment problems, too. So I've got a post about this on Friday, and we're going to get into it more on the Friday show, but I just wanted to respond to a couple of our friends who I know are listening down in Mexico. Well, Fausta, let's begin with Venezuela, because the situation down there, I'm sure you're probably having a hard time keeping up with it because it's changing literally by the minute. So what is the latest you can tell us, Fausta, about Venezuela?
Well, the latest I had this morning when I checked when I was writing my post is that there were 3 dead from demonstrations yesterday, which means that there have been 7 dead from the last month's worth of demonstrations. Now, the Wall Street Journal had an article saying that many poor Venezuelans are too hungry to join the protest. And analysts say that until the slums rise up, Maduro will likely hang on, and I agree with that. Now, the demonstration that was yesterday was, if you look at the pictures that Venezuela News and Views, are absolutely horrible. There was an instance where people were literally jumping into the river from an elevated highway because the colectivos were attacking the crowd with weapons, and of course the colectivos are armed, but the people are not. So the disturbing pictures in more than one way, disturbing for the violence and they're disturbing for the kind of government that allows this to continue. Meanwhile, supposedly Maduro has armed more colectivos than people that he has in the military. So even while the military may not be firing into the crowds, which they're not, apparently it is the police and the colectivos, the military probably don't want to mess with the colectivos because, I mean, first of all, these are unruly, to put it mildly, armed people with no military training and no discipline who are essentially for an ideology and for the violence itself. Plus the fact that the military is in charge of the food supply and in charge of whatever supplies are in the country for medicine and so on. So the whole thing is a horrible disaster. Unfortunately, I don't think the United States or the European Union or anybody should interfere directly. I believe very firmly that Venezuela has to figure out on its own that socialism is not going to work the way the Chileans figured out years ago. And it's going to get rough, and it's going to continue getting rougher.
Well, it is because, when I saw the scene of that young woman, her body after she had been, I think she was hit by something that fell from a building, right? She wasn't actually shot. Right. But when I saw that young woman's body on the street and people around her, it reminded me of that scene in Iran in 2009. Remember when there was remember the young woman who was killed in Iran and Tehran? And that's kind of what reminded me of. And I kept saying to myself, my gosh, I hope it turns out differently than it did in Iran, because in Iran there were massive demonstrations, but at the end of the day, nothing changed. And one of the reasons it didn't change, I think, my opinion, is because the Obama administration didn't line up with the people who were demonstrating. I agree with you that no one should intervene in the sense of a military intervention, but it would be nice if people would actually line up with the people. I mean, the outsiders, countries would actually line up with the people. I mean, I don't know of anybody in the world who believes that demonstrators should be shot like that or should be treated like that. And I know there's a lot of speculation as to how long the army, Fausta, is going to support Maduro. At some point, armies do not like shooting at their own people, Fausta, as you know.
Well, the army, you have very several points here. First of all, is the question of the army itself. The second question is Iran. And the third one is the foreign actions. First of all, the army, the military are heavily involved in the drug trade through the Cartel de los Soles. And that is going to remain that way. There is no outside reason why it should not. I mean, there's, especially since a lot of the money is what's keeping them and the regime running. The issue of Iran is interesting. The comparison with Iran is very interesting because apparently a lot of the military and the colectivos both received training from Iran's military sometime in the past. It is not clear whether that has ceased or whether it was only during Chavez's lifetime or when exactly. But the repressive tactics came and had been continued through agency and help from outside actors, including not only Iran, but also Cuba. The third one is that until Venezuela is completely sanctioned by every country in the world and receives a treatment of an international pariah, the way that South Africa treated back during the days of apartheid, the regime is just not going to change. Maduro may come into office, may leave office, I mean, somebody else may replace him, but the fact is that the regime is not going to change. The vice president of Venezuela is in the U.S. Treasury Department's kingpins list. The U.S. Treasury Department has frozen apparently $3 billion worth of his assets. And this is the same guy we're talking about that it was linked to the sale of the Venezuelan passports to Hezbollah characters. So, but until Venezuela is relegated as a pariah, things are not going to change. Military intervention is not going to do it because of the fragmented situation. The opposition is divided, even when, you know, right now they're getting these demonstrations that are sizable. But the violence that the regime is willing to inflict on its people directly, either through the police, the institutions, the military, or the colectivos, is not going to stop until it's exactly very clear that there are pariahs for doing it. And I mean, I feel very strongly about this. I don't see any option.
Right. Well, I think you have a very good point there. The other thing, too, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think another comparison to Iran, and this is also true in Cuba, these regimes have really two armies. They have the general army, which is made up primarily of draftees and young men who, you know, serve in the army. And then they have a sort of a personal protection army, which is a group of extremely well-trained men who are basically, their job is to protect the dictatorship. They also benefit from it, of course, a great deal. And I wouldn't be surprised if those are the people that Maduro is actually depending on. Would I be right to say that, Fausta?
Not only you are correct, also the fact is that Cuba is in charge of the intelligence service in Venezuela and also in charge of issuing passports and permits.
Right. So basically what you have here is a situation in most countries where you have the army turning against the regime. What you basically have people, leaders of the army, who basically turn against the government. Well, this is, I mean, Cuba is a classical case of Batista in the 1930s. I'm sure that others throughout Latin American history, there are other examples. I think Pinochet would be another example like that. And they're able to, they command significant numbers of forces that they can actually take over the army and then, in a sense, take over the country. Here, I think what would have to happen, or what could happen, would be a bloody fight between these special militias protecting the regime and the army itself. And I fear these militias are perhaps better armed and more willing to fight than the regular army, Fausta.
I do not have enough information to speculate on that, just because of the fact that the regular army's involvement with the Cartel de los Soles. I don't have enough information on the Cartel de los Soles to know what kind of, you know, tactics and so on do they use.
Yeah. Well, if they're involved with cartels, that means they're benefiting. I mean, if they're involved with carteles, then that means that they're profiting in their position right now. In other words, Maduro is allowing them to become very rich with these cartels. And that, of course, means that these militias, these armies, these officers have a vested interest in keeping the regime in power. I mean, I think you would agree with that, Fausta.
Well, yes, the same thing with the colectivos, which are the ones being armed. I mean, the regime, see, one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that this communist regime has been consolidating power around itself since the days where Hugo Chavez was barely getting started. So they have had more than a dozen years to almost perfect this to the point where everything and everybody is contingent on what goes on in that regime, as opposed to, you know, any kind of independent institutions or even agencies. Even the criminals are involved with the government. So it's a horrible situation. I feel very bad for the Venezuelans, and I don't think this is something that the changes can come from the exterior unless, like I said, you know, there's a complete pariah status, which I think is extremely unlikely to happen, because if you look at the United Nations and places like that, they're very sympathetic to anything that is not democratic or anything that is not rule of law. There are a lot of corrupt countries in the UN.
Oh, sure, and a lot of countries in the OEA or Organización de OAS or whatever, who just don't want to get involved. They simply do not. I mean, they may say this or that, but at the end of the day, they're not going to get involved because it's always been their tradition not to get involved in anything that goes on. And another country, it reminds me of a professor from Colombia one time who spoke at the university, and I had a chance to listen to him. I think his last name was Londoño. And he was talking about, you know, Latin American politics and all of that. And after the session, I went up to him and I asked him about, you know, why is it that more Latin American countries don't take a position on Cuba or call for elections in Cuba or something like that. And he said something to me. He said, well, the reason a lot of these countries don't get involved is because they don't want to expose themselves to having to have, you know, examinations of their own elections or whatever, that they basically want to be able to keep a distance from any kind or saying anything about in any other country that could come back later to impact them. So maybe that's what's happening now. A lot of these regimes are, you know, on the surface, very disappointed with what's happening in Venezuela, but nobody wants to take the first step. And unfortunately, like you said, unless it has to come from within. It may very well come from within. I mean, the situation in Venezuela right now is very ugly. And if you see the news and everything, you know, one would get the feeling that Maduro is not, you know, I don't know how much longer he can hold on to power, but he probably has enough air to hold on to power for a little bit, Fausta.
I don't know whether the powers that be in Venezuela are interested in getting rid of Maduro at this point. He may be replaced, he may not, but another thing with foreign governments giving opinions on Venezuela is that one has to remember that CARICOM was essentially bought and sold with Venezuelan oil years ago. Now, I don't know what the status of the oil is. It is certainly bad enough that Venezuela more or less sold Citgo to the Russian, to Rosneft, the Russian oil agents company. And if they're doing that, it means that they're really broke, because Citgo used to be the, essentially the jewel in the crown. But we'll see about whether about Maduro's permanence. Who replaces him would be interesting to see. I don't think at the moment Maduro is about to leave unless he is forced to leave by the people who are behind him.
Well, we, again, I think I'm skeptical like you are, but I just think that it may reach a point for, but surely for the sake of publicity or public relations, it may reach a point where the people behind Maduro may just say, we got to get rid of this guy because he's too much of a problem. And then maybe replace him with somebody else. Fausta, let me take a little break, and we'll come back and continue our conversation with Fausta Rodriguez Words, the editor of Fausta's blog.
This is Carlos Quedes, Heartbeat, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
One of the best things you can do around here on Saturday nights is go see Carlos play. I mean, it's just absolutely fantastic. And the food is absolutely great as well. Let's get back to Fausta Rodriguez Words. We were just talking about Venezuela. Fausta, you were going to say something. I had indicated right before we took a break that I feel that maybe even the people supporting Maduro, I mean the inner group supporting him, may come to the conclusion that he's simply too much of a public relations nightmare, and may replace him with one of their own, but nevertheless replace Maduro just to get him off stage. And you were going to say something, and then we had to take a break. So go ahead and finish, Fausta.
Well, the problem with replacing Maduro is not so much replacing him. The problem with replacing Maduro at this point is that the few Venezuelans who remain believers Chavez, in the late Hugo Chavez, essentially say, well, things are bad because Chavez died. Once you replace Maduro, who's going to take the blame? You know, because Maduro comes across as a bumbling fool in more than one way. But once you replace Maduro and you have somebody else who does not come across as a bumbling fool, then you're going to have to start thinking, well, why exactly things this horrible? And,
right,
of course, they're not going to blame socialism, which is why. They're going to blame the empire. They're going to blame everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But people will still say, well, you know, if Chavez was around, things would be better. So replacing him means that somebody else is going to be willing to take the blame. And that's not a light subject. I mean, that's going to present a problem.
Yes, I kept thinking maybe Raul Castro can offer him a bus route in Havana, you know, give him a bus route.
Raul Castro is about to apparently Raul Castro is going to retire next year, and King Philip of Spain and the Prime Minister of Spain, Rajoy, are going to visit him.
Well, why don't we go there next? That's an interesting group to go to Cuba. What do you think is behind that? I'm sure they're there to promote business or whatever, but that's interesting that both are coming together for Fausta.
Well, I think what happens is, first of all, Spain has invested, Spanish businesses in general, not directly the government of Spain, but Spanish businesses for decades have invested hundreds, if not thousands of millions of dollars in Cuba. They have not been paid. And maybe it is that the Prime Minister of Spain is hoping that now that there is business coming from the United States and the so-called embargo was eased and so on, there might be a chance to be able to collect on some of that money if they promise some more investment, at least nominally. I don't know whether that's what's behind the rationale. If it is, there's an old saying, you know, throwing good money after bad. So
yes,
I wouldn't expect I wouldn't expect that the communist regime in Cuba, which is still communist, even if Raul Castro retires or not, is going to change its spots and decide that we're gonna make do with whatever money we can keep, and we're gonna start paying foreigners, because historically they have not, and the regime itself will not change in that aspect, even when Raul is gone, whether he's retired or what.
Well, also if they start taking care of foreigners, they're gonna have a lot of foreigners showing up, including a lot of Americans who are still trying to get their money. So it's we'll see what happens, but it is interesting that both of them are going together. Fausto, let's jump to Ecuador, where they apparently, well, they still haven't had a recount, as you last reported. You think that's ever going to happen?
No, what happened was they had a partial recount, where they only counted apparently 10% of the total vote this week. And they have, which would have been 1.6 million votes. And, of course, Moreno, which is Rafael Correa's preferred candidate, won that partial recount too. So now, to give you an impression of what this means is, the total population of Quito is 1.6 million people. So if you had a recount in the United States of, say, 10% of the total votes, you would have, I don't know, about a million votes or so.
Well, it'd be about 10 million in the United States, because we have 125 million people who voted, so...
Right.
I guess it would be 12 million, something like that, yeah.
Right, it would be like 12 million votes. And then you say, well, we have a recount, and whoever comes out on top, and there's no reason to doubt it. So it looks very bad for an outsider like myself. The opposition in Ecuador, of course, is very unhappy, and I think personally that it's a travesty to do something like that. If you're going to have a recount, have a real recount of every district, every ballot, with international observers, with transparency, and make public every step of the way.
Right, and if you remember, back in 2000, that was a whole issue in Florida. The Gore people wanted to do a recount of selected precincts, and the Bush people said, "We don't care. We'll take a recount, but it's got to be the whole state." I mean, and then the Supreme Court basically said, "No, if you have a selective recount, you're not treating every vote the same," and that's what led to the famous Bush versus Gore decision that people continue to misrepresent, saying that the Supreme Court elected Bush. No, that's not what the Supreme Court did. The Supreme Court simply correctly said that you couldn't do a partial recount. I think the problem down in Ecuador, Fausta, is that every day that goes by is one day that Lenin Moreno comes closer and closer to becoming president, and then after that you can kiss the recount goodbye. But here's another example, Fausta, of where the OAS or Latin America could play a role here and simply say, you know, we're not going to allow, you know, a country to get away with something like this, but, you know, I don't have a lot of faith on the OAS. I think it's pretty much of a worthless group when it comes to doing anything other than, well, whatever the heck they do, Fausto.
About the only people who had made a hassle about the OAS decision was Venezuela, when the OAS threatened to take its charter because of the lack of democracy. And look where that has gone to.
Right, exactly, yeah. That hasn't worked out too well. Well, in Mexico, couple of Tories coming out of Mexico. By the way, anything new with Kate Castillo? Did they ever find her in the Netflix series? Is she still lost in the streets? The La Primera Dama, is she still lost?
Brad is reporting that I couldn't take it anymore, and I'm watching Fargo instead now that it started last night on FX.
Good for you, Fausta. I'm glad to see that you've made a good decision. But anyway, there is a runaway governor, but I saw a story. I think I could be wrong. Please correct me, Fausta. But I thought I saw a story that the runaway governor had been found somewhere. So what can you tell us about the famous runaway governor?
Well, actually, there were more than one runaway governors in plural. I believe there were five on the lam, and two were caught. The first one was the governor of Tamaulipas. Remember where the students disappeared? His name is Tomas Yarrington. And the big scandal on this, if it was someplace other than Mexico, is that documents show that he was assigned official police bodyguards while he was evading arrest warrants last year. The Attorney General for Tamaulipas under a previous administration authorized Tamaulipas state policemen to provide security to Mr. Yarrington anywhere in Mexico between July and December of 2016. Now, Yarrington was found in Italy, and he was arrested on Sunday on a U.S. warrant by Italian police when he was after he was leaving a restaurant in Florence, Italy. Now, he is wanted both in Mexico and the United States for drug trafficking and money laundering. But this is a guy, I don't know if you remember years ago, he was the guy who was playing the Gulf Cartel, the Zetas, and the Beltran Leyva Cartel against each other. So that's why he needed official state security. I mean, when you're doing that, somebody's going to fry you. But in any case, then there were four other governors, all of them from the three, from Veracruz, Tamaulipas, Coahuila, and Chihuahua. Now, they got the guy from Tamaulipas, and they also got the guy from Veracruz. The guy from Veracruz is the guy who left a public debt of $837 million. He was found in Guatemala, and he escaped by helicopter, like something out of a movie. But he said that his administration spent something like $2.5 billion that was unaccounted for. So
that's pretty interesting.
I wonder where that money went. But
yeah,
this guy at least was in Guatemala. He didn't go all the way to Italy to have dinner in a restaurant in Florence.
Right.
Duarte was expelled from the PRI, and the guy from Tamaulipas, I believe, has not been expelled from the PRI yet. But
well, I thought it was – I got to tell you a couple of quick stories about that. Corredor in Mexico, a corredor is what they popularly – that's the popular expression for a insurance broker, what we would call an insurance broker up here.
Yeah.
So when I – when I saw that, you know, el corredor, I mean, that's kind of a new expression. I'm sure a lot of Mexicans are having fun with that word. And Tamaulipas, this is something for years. When I lived in Mexico City, I would see license plates that would say TAMPS, you know, TAMPS, and I always thought it was Tampico. So one day, you know, I don't know. I just always thought it was Tampico. So one day I said to my, you know, one of my the Mexican fellows that I was working with, and I said, man, why do I see so many cars from Tampico here in Mexico City? He says, no, that's not Tampico. That's Tamaulipas, which is a state right on the U.S. border. In fact, I'm trying to remember what the major – I think what's the city that I forgot the name of the city, the major city in Tamaulipas. Not Aguascalientes, something else. But anyway, it's a major state on the U.S. border, and it has been over years, of course, unfortunately, associated with a lot of cartel activity. One thing also I wanted to say about Mexico, Fausta, is you know, some Mexicans are now returning to Mexico, and it's interesting. Even President Peña Nieto went to the airport to greet them. And many of them came back and they were given the royal treatment. And the labor secretary said, hey, unlike those things happening in the United States, we welcome you back. But of course, it's a real challenge for many of these people to come back because, you know, they may not necessarily be able to find jobs or the schools for their kids and all of that. And it's kind of an interesting thing that is happening that, and I think it has a lot to do with Trump, because when Obama was president, a lot of these people came back, but they were not greeted at the airport by the president. And now they're almost being treated like victims of Trump, which is, I guess, just another indication that the only thing the political class in Mexico can agree on is President Trump. Everything else they disagree on, they cannot get along. It is just like the title of that Netflix series, Ingobernable. In many ways, the country is turning, it's becoming that. But at least they all agree on Trump, Fausto. That is the one issue they all agreed on. I mean, when you say Trump, they all agree on that one, Fausto.
Well, was it last week that we were talking about how blame games are a sign of political immaturity?
Yes, and there's a lot of political immaturity in Mexico. I'll say that right now. I'll say that right now because blaming Trump has the only thing. I mean, if you see a political debate in Mexico, they kill each other until somebody says Trump, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're all once again getting along and agreeing with each other. It's going to be very interesting when they have elections in 2018, which is a year or so from now, when they start having their debates, because they're going to tear each other up on everything, but they all will agree that Trump is bad for Mexico, Fausta. One last topic I wanted to bring up today, it's not a news story, it's actually a history topic. It was this week in 1980 that the Mariel boat lift began. And we all remember the stories of the Cubans and the embassies and all of that. And for me, this was a somewhat of an important moment because I had for some time been detached from Cuba, not on purpose. It's just that you're growing up and you got things to do, and then you started going to college and then you got a job and you weren't seeing your parents every day anymore and you weren't having dinner with them every day. So the topic of Cuba became somewhat of a, not as big a topic as it was when we were living at home with our parents and talking about Cuba every day at dinner time. And for me, Mariel was the one issue that brought all of this back. I'll never forget watching television and saying to myself, my goodness, these people are coming from the place I left. It almost like it reconnected me with Cuba. And I've been very interested by Cuba ever since. But it really reconnected me with Cuba. And yesterday I was speaking with my friend Marcos Nelson Suarez, who lives here in North Texas. He was a Marielito. He was there at one of the embassies and left in one of the boats. And Fausta, it's remarkable, remarkable how many people wanted to leave Cuba during that week. And it's just amazing how many people, when Castro said, que se vayan, you can leave, it's amazing how many people wanted to leave Cuba. I mean, Castro was almost overthrown that week, Fausta, many, many years ago, Fausta.
Well, and it's good to hear your reflections on this, because so many people just think of, like, Scarface and Al Pacino when they talk about Mariel, and, you know, the human stories are a lot different from what you have in most people's minds. Even people that
right.
are normally reasonably well-informed.
Exactly, and as I mentioned in my post at the American Thinker today, I said, don't judge Marielitos by Tony Montana and Scarface, because that was such a, that was such an unfortunate depiction of the Marielito, well, one of them, to say the least. And the fact is that the overwhelming majority of these people, to say 90% of them, integrated into society. Most of them did not have university degrees. They were not professional in terms of education or experience, but they were hardworking people who were able to go into the economy and make something out of themselves. And here they are, 37 years later. Many of them now have children, grandchildren who have been born here. And I think looking back at that group, I think it was a pretty successful in immigration, Fausta.
I have two bits of trivia for you. The first is that Ben Bauer, who was Al Pacino's sidekick in Scarface, started his career in Que Pasa USA when he was much younger.
That's right. That's right.
Now he
my
is
favorite,
in.
My favorite.
Now
character
he is in Ray Donovan.
Yeah, no, but I was going to say my favorite character in Que Pasa USA was La Abuela. But that's
okay.
Oh,
she
that's
always
because,
was, of course.
Yes, she reminds me of
and
my mother.
Other,
that's why.
The other bit of trivia is that because of the Marielle vote list, Reynaldo Arenas left Cuba and wrote an excellent memoir, which I highly recommend either in the original Spanish or in the translation called Before Night Falls. It was made into a movie with Javier Bardem. I don't know if you remember it, but the book is so much better than the movie, and it was a heartbreaking story.
Yes, it was. And there were other heartbreaking stories, too. A lot of just a lot of situation. My, there's always a, whenever there's a Cuban story, there's always a joke, in, or at least some humor. And I remember the story of the guy in Miami who somehow was put on a boat, and he woke up in Miami. I guess the guy was drunk. And they put him in a boat in Cuba when he was drunk, had no idea that he was, where he was going. And then it turns out that, that he's in Miami. So this guy wakes up in Miami and is, you know, where am I? We're in Miami. What? I just, I was just in Cuba, right? I don't know if that's a true story, but it was a pretty good, funny story to hear, Fausta.
Yep, I with the amount of people that came, I wouldn't be surprised if that happened to at least one.
That's right. No, you're right, but it was just, I remember when I laughed so hard when I heard that story. There's two great Cuban jokes, two great Cuban jokes about the immigration. One was that one about the drunk showing up, and the other one was the Alvarez Guerrez story about this is in the early days of Miami. This Cuban guy is driving a car, and he hits somebody. So the guy throws himself on the street pretending to be dead, and the Cuban guy gets out of the car and looks at him and says, hey, don't do that, because I'm Cuban too, and I'm broke, so you're not going to get any money from me. And that that was an Alvarez Guerrez joke that used to crack me up so much back in, you know, about those experiences of Cubans in Miami. Well, Fausta, did I miss anything? I think I went through my whole agenda here. Did I miss any issues?
I think we covered everything that was
I think we covered everything. Well, I definitely want to thank you again for your participation. I want to thank you again for your excellent coverage of Venezuela. And maybe the next time we do a show, we'll try to get our friend Daniel Ducanal to join us. Like you, I have been following his stuff. I am a subscriber to his blog, so I get his stuff daily by email, and I know that you probably get a lot of it yourself. But he's doing at least a pretty good job of reporting what's going on. But I would think it's getting hard to report the stuff because lack of electricity and lack of internet. A lot of stuff gets hard to it's hard to get it out of the country, Fausta.
Well, not only that, you're in a zone of great upheaval, and for instance, he posted yesterday that he got gas briefly just because he was, you know, in a neighborhood that that was having some, you know, gassing and so on.
Yeah,
but
well, what's
it was,
interesting.
It was horrible.
Yeah, it was. And what's interesting is some Facebook friends of mine who do not live in Caracas, they've been posting some pictures of what's going on in their towns. It's pretty... This is happening all across the country. It's not just in Caracas. Caracas, of course, gets a lot of the attention because of the national and international media and because the crowds are larger, of course. But, man, it's happening all over the country, and we pray for the people of Venezuela. We hope that there's at least no more dead people, because the seven is way too many. Fausta, as always, thank you for your time. Thank you for the great work you do, and we'll chat again. Keep up the great work at Fausta's blog.
Thank you, Zito. It's always an honor and a pleasure, and we'll do this some more.
Let's do it again. I want to thank everybody who's listening over at Babaloo. Thank you very much for your support over there. We always appreciate your comments and your reflections on the program. As I said, a very tough week for Venezuela, and we pray we hope that everything works out in that wonderful country of Venezuela. Goodbye, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Thank you.